Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, welcome to the show here on a Sunday. QT and Sign Guy with you as usual. Some show notes as we wait on our guest today. If you're looking for wrestling today, Supreme Wrestling happening in Madison, Indiana. And if you're in Portland, two shows today, DOA Pro Wrestling happening in the next hour. And then later tonight, you can catch me at Blue Collar Wrestling at the North Portland Eagles. So, some wrestling out there. If you got some near you, go support it. QT, lots of wrestling out there. When are we going to see the top 9 and 7 eighths resume?
The top 9 and 7 eighths will depend on the action that you see tonight at Blue Collar Wrestling.
Yes. I see. Are you saying that they might be out as early as Tuesday morning at 7:30 a.m.
I think there's a good chance. It depends on if the espresso machine in our apartment lounge works, because I need that caffeine to publish 9 7/8. Yes. And speaking,
well, I believe
of
our
caffeine,
guest has joined us, so I want to bring him on right away. Do we have Go-Go the Wrestler with us?
Hey, you got him.
Well, Go-Go, thank you for taking time to be with us on Turnbuckle Turmoil today. We appreciate it. And since today is your first time with us, we will lead you off with the first-timer's question. What got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Whenever I was real little, my parents always took me out to, different wrestling shows. One that was around here locally, it's more into Kentucky. There was Louisville Gardens, and they had wrestling shows there with guys like Ric Flair, Jerry the King Lawler, Harley Race, a lot of these legends that everybody looks up to nowadays. And I got to watch them growing up. So, that kind of always got me into the wrestling kind of stuff.
So the old Memphis territory, essentially.
Yes, exactly.
Now, at what point did you yourself decide that the wrestling business is what you wanted to do as a career?
What sounds funny is, most people make that decision. A couple of people had actually sort of made the decision for me. Just fooling around when I was younger, I had a trampoline in the backyard, and, I would do some cool flips, and I kind of had an idea of how the business worked a little bit because my dad got to work security at a couple of events, so I was able to go backstage and meet wrestlers and stuff. And, a lot of my friends growing up kept telling me, hey, you should be doing this. Like, you seem like you've got a good kind of charisma or something to you. And I guess I'm a little overly outgoing sometimes. And so they were just like, go do this, go check it out. And so a friend of mine that was actually in my wedding ended up telling me, he's like, hey, I'm wrestling in the NWA. And he told me to drive out there with him one night, and I did. And that spiraled out from there.
Now, you, of course, wrestle in several areas in the Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio region there. When you look at the landscape of today's independent wrestling compared to the old Memphis territory wrestling, a lot of the fans that were fans of the Memphis territory are today's fans that support a lot of the independents. Do you still get a sense of that level of fandom that would go to the Louisville Gardens every single week that now go to the different independent companies, or do you think that the type of fan is now totally different?
different in a sense, I guess I would say, you know, back in the day where, you know, I'm 27 years old. So if I drop it back to when I was like five, you know, going and watching some of these guys, you know, the technology we have nowadays to get a hold of, you know, as a wrestler, like wrestling gear and stuff, you know, you had to know a guy who knew a guy that was in the business to, you know, be able to get a pair of boots. And then even at that point, you know, there wasn't much variety. So you couldn't go, hey, I want a pair of blue boots with red laces. It was just, you know, you kind of would get what you could and you worked around that. And so, you know, those guys had to try extremely hard in order to just get what they needed to be in the business. And so once they were in, it was a kind of a, I'm here and I'm doing it. And nowadays, when you're in the ring, there's so much, I say, especially in the area that I'm currently in, it's kind of like where anybody could just go, you can go to a website and find any kind of boot and tights and, you know, in any color, any size, it's just readily available. Even if you're not a wrestler, you can buy this stuff. And so now it becomes super competitive in the area that I'm in, that you have to overly stand out with, you know, what you can get and things like that. And I think one thing that ended up with me was just the background story of how GoGo was created, which is odd in its own. Everybody in the building I was in wore black boots, and I kept hearing them say, you know, hey, you know, be different, be original. And so I was like, I'm going to go get a pair of, you know, white boots. And so that was something that led into what got my name, because these were these tall white boots that almost come to your knee. And I walked into training one day and they're like, your new nickname's GoGo. And then, you know, here I was with all this. So as an audience wise, point of view, when you're watching it, yes, it's a little different, but the audience has so much variety to choose from now with different shows that, you know, it's, you almost have to be overly competitive with other companies. And, you know, to get people to want to watch you, you have to go above and beyond because there's so much they can choose from nowadays.
Most definitely. Now, another thing that helps wrestlers stand out is merchandising. A lot of wrestlers put a lot of time and effort into merchandising because often on the independent circuit, that's where the most money is made. Obviously, there's all manners of merchandise at gimmick stands everywhere. There's t-shirts, there's pictures, there's stickers, there's coffee cups, there's replica masks, all kinds of things out there. What have you done as far as merchandising yourself?
What sounds so funny is the guys that train me, I keep hearing this echo in my head, always be different, be original. And pretty much when you first start in the business, the easiest thing to just get a hold of is go to your, you know, your local Walgreens or an Office Depot or a Walmart and, you know, print off some headshots or some photos of you posing as a wrestler. Typically, just a little easy moneymaker kind of thing. Photos are about maybe 10 cents a piece, and you can sell them for a dollar, take your Sharpie and, you know, autograph it for fans and stuff when they want to buy them. And it's just something cheap. People can come up and buy one little thing. And so where I was at, once, you know, I'd kind of done that for a while, once, you know, most of your fans are buying your photos, you either have to get new ones or get something different. And so I've noticed at the arena that I wrestle in, mainly over in Jeffersonville, Indiana now, everybody has T-shirts. So every wrestler has a different T-shirt. And that's, you know, kind of a competitive area where it's like if I came out with a T-shirt – I mean, I have all these other, you know, competitors to try to beat out. And so I started this thing called the Masked Movement. I think it was more about the end of 2017 going into 2018. And I was like, you know, I just want masked wrestlers to kind of stand out because a lot of shows that I work, there are no other masked wrestlers. And so I thought it would be funny. I got a hold of a guy through a few phone calls off eBay that was in Mexico. And I said, could you get me a huge... you know, a lot of wrestling masks, like some authentic Mexican-made luchador wrestling masks. And he sent me up a box of 300, and I just started selling. Since I got so many of a quantity, I was able to sell them a lot cheaper. And most wrestling masks you find on, you know, anywhere on eBay or stuff to buy, on eLucha.com or RingSpot, you'll see like a cheaper price being somewhere of $30 and then upwards of buying a mask. And so I started selling them for $10 a piece at a merch table. And I realized I was actually onto something, because the first night that I sold them at one of the events, I made almost $150 just off my masks. And, you know, other people are making maybe 10, 20 bucks off of their t-shirts, but I was onto something, because I was selling something different. And then it was cool because I get to look out and all these kids and even adults are wearing wrestling masks. And I started, you know, getting pictures with them and stuff too. I was like, you know, hey, if you got a mask, come over and get a photo with me. I'd love to, you know, start sharing you on Facebook and stuff like that. So I'd say that's kind of where the merch thing ended with me, where it was, you know, you look at all the other competitors, if you want to take them as, or, you know, your other wrestling guys that you're with, and you just kind of say, hey, if they're doing this, I need to do something different. And there is so much, there's wrestlers that are selling energy drinks around me now with their faces on them. And so, you know, the more creative you can get with magnets or stickers or things like that, that's what'll kind of help you. And it's made me a lot of money. I mean, I do make money getting booked, but like you say, a lot of that money comes from, you know, being able to go out of your way and sell your own merchandise.
One of the matches you have upcoming is a tag team match, and that match is going to pit you and your partner against a team called Beer and Pizza. This seems like a very formidable tag team. Can you tell us a little bit more about Beer and Pizza?
Both of these guys, I'm so excited to actually, you know, work these two. I was able to face Papa J at the last EWE show, and it was kind of a weird turn of events where I got small packages rolled up, and while the referee wasn't looking, my tag team partner rolled our pin over so that I actually won. And so it led up to this match where Papa J wanted a rematch, but with both of us. And so he got Pizza Guy to be his tag team partner. So now we have Beer and Pizza as this tag team. And they're both extremely good competitors. You can catch them both a lot of the times at Grindhouse Pro Wrestling. And they're starting to work their way into EWE. And so me and my tag team partner, we love the competition and stuff, because we were the first ever EWE tag team champions. And so, you know, we've always kind of taken that to heart to go, you know, we want to bring out the competitiveness. And this match in particular is an exciting match, which is what my tag team partner, Mr. Excitement, came up with. And it's one of the things where all the weapons either need to be epic or exciting was kind of their phrasing that they used. And the match that me and him competed in before, I mean, we had a table, a sword, Captain America shield, a cheese grater, seashells, a Harry Potter wand. I mean, it was just whatever you could think of was happening in this match. And so that was the only solo match we had. So they said, hey, we're going to have a tag team exciting match. And it's at Epic Mania on May 18th, I believe. You know, the biggest show for Epic Wrestling Entertainment, we said, you know, let's bring everything we got, you know, a whole new variety of weapons fans, you know, aren't used to and stuff. So the worst part is it's unpredictable. So it's not really one of those I can vouch to train for, because I don't know what to expect until I'm actually in the ring. But I got a feeling it's going to be a lot of fun.
Now, obviously in professional wrestling, cardiovascular conditioning is vital, especially for guys like yourself that wear masks. Cardio can be even more important, because a mask usually causes you to need extra cardio to get through the longer matches. What do you personally do as far as cardiovascular training?
I like this question, because I'm kind of currently dealing with it. I found out when I was training, you know, I could do a lot of, you know, lucha stuff, you know, off the ropes or rolling or things like that. And when it came to just running the ropes just for training, I was having a lot of chest pains and you know, my heart was hurting and my lungs was hurting, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And so I was trying to get it checked out and stuff. And, you know, I apparently, you know, from growing up, never doing a whole lot of cardio, you know, I would work out and stuff, but not cardio is very big when it comes to your, respiratory system, of just being able to breathe and knowing how to breathe when you're running and stuff. And I've found out for, you know, 20 something years, I've been doing this incorrectly. And so I was getting blown up very fast, and mid-match, you know, 10 minutes go by, and I'm breathing really heavy because I'm having trouble, you know, catching my breath. And so what I had learned, you know, and also, just like you say, with wearing a wrestling mask, you know, your peripheral vision is already cut short, and when it's hot in the summer, you're sweating even more because, you know, your mask builds up so much heat in it. And I finally got with a couple of professionals that, you know, had done this kind of stuff and were a little bit bigger guys. And I'm seeing them, you know, carry on a 60-minute Ironman match like it's nothing. And so I had to start telling them, I was like, you know, what is it that's, you know, preventing me from doing this? And they were kind of showing me how they would hit the ropes and breathe properly. And they said, a lot of it, you know, just go home. You know, I've got a dog, and they're like, just take him out for walks and stuff. Like, you know, just going out and walking and jogging just a little bit and learning to kind of breathe normally, not like suck in so much air and breathe incorrectly like I have been, I guess, over the years. And so a lot more, I guess, now when I'm hitting gyms and stuff, doing more treadmill stuff and ellipticals and stuff. Because I guess, you know, I just not doing that so many years, it took a lot away from me. But I'm starting to build that control up where I can, you know, have that kind of better breathing. And I hate it so much of, you know, getting to like a 10-minute match and realizing, you know, I've got to get this guy down for a 3 count, because if it goes longer, I'm not going to be able to have the energy or right breathing to be able to go any further. And then my opponent's going to beat me. And so thankfully now, the best part with tag teaming is being able to, you know, tag out, sit on the apron to catch your breath and kind of recover from anything you've taken. And so the most wonderful thing with, you know, being able to tag team right now, I'm working currently on getting that breathing up, and it's actually doing really well. I've realized, you know, I can run a couple more blocks now without, you know, losing my breath. And like I said, God, oxygen is so wonderful, and I've been neglecting it over the years. So I don't know the best way to say it, but, you know, I am getting better at it, and I intend to get a whole lot better at it.
One of the more controversial aspects in pro wrestling in the last several years has been the deathmatch scene in wrestling. A lot of people think that deathmatch wrestling is passe and there's no place for it. A lot of people are still very, very adamant that there's a place and a time for deathmatches, both from a fan's perspective and a wrestler's perspective. There's really hardcore beliefs on both sides of the equation. Where do you stand as far as deathmatch wrestling?
And I would be a hypocrite if I said that I also watch, you know, some death matches and stuff online. I've seen some stuff with Crazy Monkey in Japan and stuff, and Masada. And the thing that I've had this talk with a couple of wrestlers before. I think that death matches are okay to have if there is a reason for it. You know, if there's been a storyline with two guys that they've been fighting and they're tearing each other apart and they finally want to settle it in just an incredibly, you know, gruesome and heavy weaponry match, then that seems okay. And you know, like I say, the ring is just to compete in, but I mean, I've gotten into that realm of, oh, I've had singles matches and I've had tag matches and even, you know, triple threat matches. But sometimes as a wrestler, you kind of want to push your limits sometimes, because, you know, sometimes you feel like high on top of the mountain and you just want to go, you know, how much further can I go? And so I got into the realm of, you know, doing a couple of no DQ matches and stuff, where there was a match I was in called a high flying match, which was you had to jump off of something in order to pin your opponent. And so, you know, we were leaping off the turnbuckles down to the floor, and we had climbed up on top of concessions areas and jumping off and stuff. And, you know, that was neat. And then a follow-up match with the same person was in a dog collar match that I was in. And, you know, just things like that where, you know, we even incorporated chairs and stuff into that match. And I had never, you know, felt what it was like to land on a chain or, you know, get hit by a chair and stuff. And, you know, to survive it and, you know, go through with all of it, you kind of go, oh, you know, what else can I do? And so you almost kind of want to keep taking it up a notch. But at the same time, the matches that I'd had with that person, I'd also had so much conflict with before. And so that kind of arose it to, you know, fans wanting to see more. And so we're like, sure, let's do it. And so I guess on my perspective with fan and wrestling is I like the idea of having a death match as long as there was a reason for it and if there was a buildup for it. You know, say if you and I started disagreeing so much in this interview that I was like, you know what, I'm going to challenge you to a match, and then one of us wins. Next time we compete again, the other person wins, and, you know, keeps building up to where we're trying to tear each other apart, and then it's like, hey, let's take the canvas off and just fight on boards and use some glass and thumbtacks and stuff, and let's see, you know, who makes it out alive. You know, I am, it's just one person's opinion, and I have had this conversation with people where they've said, you know, I'm an idiot for thinking death matches are okay. It's not a form of wrestling or should be allowed, and it's too gruesome. But, you know, there are fans out there that do want to see that. I'm sure a lot of you guys are familiar with CZW, which is a big fan of tournament death matches and stuff. And I've seen people take, you know, a weed whacker into the ring and run it against someone's chest and things like that. And those matches aren't for the people who have weak stomachs or things like that. But there is a fan base out there that does enjoy it.
In deathmatch wrestling, as well as any other form of wrestling, because of the nature of the sport, injuries are always going to be there, whether they're minor injuries that someone can work through or a major injury that takes someone out of in-ring action for a long period of time. It's just part of the business. What are some of the injuries that you've had during the course of your career?
You know, what was funny, if you had asked me this a month ago, I would have said, luckily, I have not had any kind of injuries, but the past match that I had at Epic Wrestling Entertainment with Papa J, which is one half of Beer and Pizza, what's funny is we say the littlest things, you know, can go wrong in wrestling that people don't even think about, and I was on the outside of the ring down on the floor, and Papa J went to toss me into the ring, and when I'm going to slide in, I had smacked my head on the bottom rope as I was diving in. Of course, you know, 200 pounds of, you know, human body that, you know, doesn't have much give for a rope stops with just my forehead. And so I remember, like, the referee checking on me and everything, and I apparently had a small concussion. And I remember getting to the locker room, and a paramedic was, you know, kind of pulling my mask off and checking on me. And it just looked like the corner of my head, you just stuck an egg underneath of my skin. And I remember getting worried because I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to have to go to the hospital or something. And, you know, luckily they stuck with me and were icing me down, and, you know, swelling went down and everything. And I'm totally fine. But, you know, it's weird things like that that, you know, you can get hurt off of. It doesn't have to be with weapons and things, you know, even the slightest injuries can occur. And I tell people, even training wise, I've seen so many people step into the ring and say, you know, this is my life passion. I can't wait to do this. And I, you know, I'm going to stick with it. And they take one bump in the ring and go, oh my gosh, that's what that feels like. You know, people don't understand, you know, a ring is, you know, made of metal and wood and stuff. And even little things like, you have to learn how to hit the ropes properly because, you know, you'll get rope burn on your back just from hitting the ropes the wrong way and stuff. So you know, the little tiny injuries are sometimes the major ones. And, you know, you wouldn't think that that's what does it, but, you know, I wouldn't think hitting a rope would give me a concussion. And just surprisingly, it did this last show. And on a good note, though, getting a small injury does kind of snap you back to reality where, you know, you want to pay as much attention as you can and get more training to be better because you do want to prevent those things from happening the best you can.
Absolutely. And one of my mentors had his neck broken on a side headlock takeover from Greg Valentine on national TV. So I completely feel you on the little things sometimes leading to massive injuries. Now, another thing that is important in professional wrestling in the last few years, something you touched on a little bit earlier, social media has become hugely vital to the success of a wrestler, a wrestling company, sometimes both together. It's out there seemingly to stay at this point. Social media has become just this huge part of professional wrestling. Do you think, by and large, wrestlers really know how to use social media responsibly, or do you think it's something that a lot of wrestlers and or promotions are lacking in right now?
You know, so, sometimes it's a little of both. Tommy Dreamer, ECW legend, and House of Hardcore owner, I guess. I've had the pleasure of sitting down with him, and, you know, he's like, you know, what social media do you use? And I said, I have a Facebook. And he's like, and what else? And I said, well, that's pretty much all I use because most of – I typically think most of my fan base is on Facebook. And so he's like, why aren't you on Instagram? Why aren't you on Twitter and, you know, Snapchat and giving me all these other things? And I was like, just because, I mean, it, you know, it's time and – you know, things like that. And I don't typically use them. And he's like, why not? They're there and people use it. That's how you can get your name out. He's like, if it's there, use it, you know, and surprisingly he is right. You know, I have an Instagram account now and I couldn't believe how many more different audience that pulls that I don't have on Facebook. And in the sense where it's like, you know, there comes consequences with using social media as well, because wrestlers, you know, we fall into the category of we are humans, and, you know, we also, some of us have lives outside of wrestling as well. And the one major thing Tommy Dreamer, you know, was saying is, you know, in WWE, he saw a lot of guys that came in through the doors and didn't get, you know, chosen to, you know, go any further in WWE because of stuff they had posted on social media. And so he said it comes down to a lot of being able to watch what you say. Typically try to stay away from, you know, politics and religion and stuff, because it is a very heavy debated topic, you know, worldwide. And so he's like, you know, stick to wrestling, what you're, you know, social media is specifically for. You are a wrestler, so you should talk about wrestling. He goes, try to only, you know, talk about your fans, events that you're going to do, you know, share flyers of companies, even if you're not on them and stuff, just to, you know, promote indie wrestling and professional wrestling in a sense. And so what's, you know, wonderful where social media can help you and give you a fan base and pull people to your shows for them to see you, can also be your downfall of posting the wrong or inappropriate things that cause you to lose a fan base and not get booked with companies and things like that. And so social media can be fantastic, but at the same time, it can also ruin your career. So if you understand and, you know, talk to people who are successful through it, as opposed to just trying to wing it yourself, it can carry you in either the right or the wrong direction.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has a plethora of questions for you as well, so I'm going to pass things to him.
All right.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Gogo.
Good to hear you.
Hey, Gogo, had you heard of Turnbuckle Turmoil before last week? Were you a fan of our show before you were contacted?
You know, as of recently, there was someone who was on your old show named Tommy Jack McGee, and I have had the pleasure of working around him for, you know, a couple of years at a few different companies around Indiana, and he had actually gotten on your old show and was, you know, kind of sharing the interview and everything that he had had. And you know, me being partially jealous, I guess, you know, I've been on like Ringside Podcast and a couple of different things and interviewed with a couple of different, you know, companies and fans. And, you know, I'd heard of you guys through him, and I was like, you know, oh man, you know, I'd really like to, you know, do something like that. But it comes to that sense where, you know, you can't just be like, hey, put me on your show. I want to be on there and let's do this. It's one of the things you kind of have to be invited on. And so whenever I'd actually got a message from you guys of, hey, would you, you know, be interested in doing this? I was like, absolutely. I'm familiar with you guys. I've started listening to, you know, a couple of your old stuff that I can find just because, like, I was like, oh, you know, I knew him that was on the show and I wonder who else they've had on there. And so whenever you guys contacted me, I was like, oh, this is going to be fantastic. I cannot wait to do this.
Oh, well, Tommy Jack McGee was asked the hard questions, and he did very well under the white-hot spotlight of our questions. He may have even signed our Turnbuckle Turmoil guest book that Sign Guy is in possession of, and anyone that has appeared on our show gets to sign our guest book. How much would it mean for you to sign our guest book? Should Sign Guy, or maybe, hopefully, myself one day, if I travel to your area, how much would that mean for you to sign it? Because a plethora of other wrestlers that have been on our show have signed it.
That would be awesome. You know, if you joke as a kid, I know pretty much everybody's almost done this once in your life. You want to leave your mark somewhere, and you know, whether it was, you know, in school, you kind of scribbling your name on the, you know, the bottom of a desk or, you know, someplace around your house or things like that, hopefully where someone else would find it. It's one of those things where it's like, I love that history in wrestling where, you know, sometimes people have these booklets and you're reading through names or seeing photos and stuff and you get to, you know, see all the other wrestlers in there. And, you know, for me to be able to sign that, it would be awesome because other people be able to see, you know, oh, Go-Go had been on there and stuff. And then me as just the inner kid, I'd be taking the book like, I want to read all these signatures. I got to see who else has been on here and everything. And especially anybody who's been on there and then goes majorly pro that's been WWE or, you know, Impact, Ring of Honor, New Japan, any of the, you know, the major shows that everybody's watching nowadays. You know, it'd be cool to look at them and be like, oh, you know, I remember when they were doing this interview and I got to, you know, hear them before their career really took off. So yeah, that'd be awesome to be able to do that. And now I'm even more jealous that he's been able to sign that too.
Well, we even had Shockwave the Robot on our show. However, I don't think he signed our guest book. Have you yourself heard of this wrestler named Shockwave the Robot?
I want to say that I have heard of him, but it doesn't ring a bell as though like I might have worked on a card with him or, you know, by happenstance, you know, just gotten to meet him or anything. Now, typically the wild thing is, again, with the social media thing that we were talking about earlier, I do have the habit of going through and just finding a ton of wrestlers and adding them in just because, you know, down the road you never know who you'll compete with and you go, oh, I've already got you as a contact. You know, if you want to hop in the car and, you know, go to this, you know, wrestling event together, things like that. So it's one of those things where I might have actually even remembered his name off maybe one of the social media pages or something. But otherwise, I'm assuming he was, you know, a delight as well to have on the show.
Well, put it this way. He was one of our more, challenging interviews. Set interview. It was one that we rarely do. Sign Guy or myself will try to send you some footage or video of Shockwave the Robot. We do like to give our guests a sample of who we have talked to and who some of our interviewees may not have known. we're pretty good at sending video. Yes.
Oh, okay, Chocolate. Cool. Yeah, I'm definitely want to check this out.
Better than do that. Okay. Well, now, Gogo, you touched earlier on the subject of cardio with Sign Guy. Do you do any jump roping, which also helps the shoulders?
I do a little bit of jump rope. I was one of those uncoordinated people when I was younger that I could not figure out a jump rope, and, you know, getting to see other kids doing these figure eight loops with it and stuff, and I'm just like, how are you all doing this? And so for years I just never used a jump rope, and whenever I kind of got back into the gym when I was going to start wrestling and kind of getting myself a little more in shape, I mean, I used to weigh about 360 pounds at one point, and I got myself down to, you know, a good 200 range. And so I was like, oh, you know, I'm getting better in shape. And so I realized I was also a little bit lighter on my feet too. So, you know, I would swing the thing and I'd be able to jump it two or three times, and I'd keep kicking my feet with the jump rope and go, all right, I'm done with this. And about a year ago, found one in my garage, and I was kind of flicking with it, and I was like, oh, you know, hey, I can actually do this. I'm actually pretty good at a jump rope. And so for years of hating the jump rope, and, you know, here as of late, I get it out every once in a while. I'd say once every couple of months I'll get out there and incorporate it into an exercise.
Very good. Very good. Jump roping does help the shoulders quite a bit. That's good. Okay. All right. Well, Gogo, have you ever wrestled on the West Coast? And if not, is it one of your goals to get out to Washington or Oregon?
You know, I have never gotten to get out that way. There's a couple of booking stuff that I'm hoping that I'll be able to take, permitting. You know, I put in quite a good number of miles on my car, so it's been having difficulties here lately. But a friend of mine through EWE is, you know, giving me the opportunity to travel out to Illinois with him. And so I'll be kind of going out that way. And then another friend of mine that has recently joined our team said he's going to be going to Texas and wanted me to go with him and stuff. So it sounds like I'll be able to do, you know, quite a bit of traveling here and you know, broadening my expand of where all I've wrestled. And so there's a couple of guys, you know, in Oregon and Kansas and stuff that I've become really good friends over social media, but I've just never met in person. And so, you know, part of me is always like, you know, I really want to get out that way just so I can, you know, kind of like, not even necessarily compete with them, but, you know, whether it's against them or with them or just being on a card with them. It's like, you know, it's surprising in the wrestling business how many friends you make that, you know, you've never met, or, you know, how many legends you'll get to see, and they'll treat you just like an equal because, you know, you're in the business. And so the answer for that is no, I have not, but I do look forward here in the near future of possibly being able to get out that way.
Oh, very good. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Gogo, you earlier talked to Sign Guy about your high-flying match. At any point, did you think about incorporating a stepladder in your match, like a ladder with only two steps and has a height of only 15 inches? Stepladder.
Well, you know, what was interesting in that match, so originally when they were making the high-flying match, it was supposed to be, you know, you just have to jump off the top rope and then pin your opponent. And the wrestling ring that we had gotten that night, earlier, I'd say it was maybe match two or three, one of the bigger guys had smacked into the corner, and the top rope turnbuckle itself actually chipped. And so the top rope was a little bit loose. And so I tell people, if you look up Gogo High Flying Match on YouTube, this will pull up. It's a red ring, I believe. And it was so wild because, you know, when you step on it, you're just seeing the top rope kind of be bouncy. And what's hard is, you know, being able to, you know, stand on this top rope and it wiggling everywhere. It was just like, oh my gosh, how are we going to, you know, steady our balance to keep jumping off this and things like that. And so they decided to tweak it and say we could jump off of anything. And so you know, we're in this area to where we're like, you know, oh, okay, we, you know, we can jump off anything. I can jump off of a chair, a trash can, you know, the bleachers, anything. You know, it was kind of one of those like, hey, let's, you know, take this to the limits. And somewhere behind the concessions, I remember there being a step stool. And I actually thought about trying to put that over the counter and use that. There was a ladder back there too, but the building didn't have a very high ceiling. So I knew even if I climbed on the ladder, I wouldn't be able to go off the very top of it. It would just be, you know, maybe midway. And for some reason, I never went back there and grabbed that step ladder. And I've realized now I should have, because I ended up not winning that match, and watched the step ladder have been the one thing that I would have actually won had I used it. But I mean, it was a fun match nonetheless. And, the only bad part, there was no pads around the ring during that match. And if you watch one, there's one, I leaped off the apron and did an elbow drop, and you can hear my back just smack the concrete. And so, I probably would have preferred the step stool jumping off at that point. It might have been less painful in that sense.
Your back smacked the concrete. Did it leave a dent in the concrete?
You know, I'd like to think that I'm that rock hard, but no, I think the concrete left a dent in me.
Oh, ouch. Oh, boy. Okay. Ooh. All right. Well, go. Every year seems to be more expensive than the last. There are many theories as to why the cost of living and medical expenses are going up. My question is, have you had any wrestlers from your area suddenly quit wrestling and their jobs and go into the military, where the room and board and medical and meals and even education is paid for, and then come back after a 4-year or 5-year enlistment? Have you ever had a wrestler do that?
I mean, not so much as, you know, the times were getting bad where they, you know, they had to leave for the military or, you know, army of any kind. And there's the guy that was actually, one of the groomsmen of my wedding who got me into wrestling, he had been in the military and, was actually, retired now from the military because of bad PTSD. And so, you know, he had been in the military and gone into wrestling and stuff. And then I hope he's listening, because I said I was going to end up giving this guy a shout out. The Gilpinator, who is from Campbellsville, Kentucky, I believe. He's been teaming with us and stuff. And I know that he's starting to do some kind of branch of the military and stuff. And so, and there's another guy, I think, named Dino Stephanopoulos, out in Madison, Indiana. You know, both those guys are, you know, going to be going in some forms of the military. And, you know, the nice thing is I'm hoping it is one of those things within, like, you know, 4 years or even less and stuff, that I get them to come back and be able to work them again and stuff. But otherwise, I'm just, you know, having tough times where they do need to leave to come back. I haven't seen that, but I have had some guys that, you know, I've had some military training that are in wrestling. And believe me, typically these guys know how to pack a punch. If you look up any videos of Leon Elliott, he's worked around Tommy Jack McGee as well. And that's one of them I'm referring to that's been into the military and have come out. And I'll tell you, they're a tough competitor. So that military does bring in that strength that you don't see in some of them.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Go, you talked to some guy earlier about a trampoline in your backyard. Did you have a brother you wrestled with on said trampoline?
You know, something sort of. I was an only child, so I didn't have the siblings to fight with and stuff. But I luckily was always, like, really close to my cousins growing up. And so I say that they were kind of like my brothers because, you know, we spend the night at each other's houses and stuff, you know, during the summers or, you know, breaks from school and stuff like that. And I do remember just we used to joke with one of my cousins because he looks so identical to Randy Orton. Not nonstop, we constantly compare him to Orton. And so just one time we were on the trampoline and, you know, like, oh, you know, it'd be fun. Let's just do some, you know, do some wrestling. After a while you get bored of jumping and you start doing dumb stuff when you're little. And so we ignored the do not try this at home signs. And I remember him in mid jump grabs me and gives me an RKO, and you know, the trampoline does not end in a flat landing. You know, it's a buoyant downward dip. And so I remember like bending in a V shape while he's holding my head and just going like, oh my God, that hurt. Like, you know, the wrestling on the trampoline is not a good idea. And then, we ended up putting a net around our trampoline. We were like, oh, you know, now it's a cage. And, you know, we just kept going back to doing like silly, you know, wrestling stuff on the trampoline. And after a while, my cousin ended up going through the net. We took it down and we still had the poles up. And I'm glad we never did, but I almost thought about drilling through the poles and putting rope through it and just turning it into like a miniature wrestling ring. And the worst thing is, you know, they tell people don't do any kind of backyard wrestling stuff because it's super unsafe. And even though your grass may be a foot tall in your yard, it is still 100% earth underneath of that that has absolutely no give to it. And so I was happy that, you know, other than doing that when I was real little, I never did that professionally or so, of trying to make a career out of doing it in the yard.
Oh, okay. All right. Very interesting. Okay. Well, Gogo, here is a question that has never been asked before on Turnbuckle Turmoil. Has your high school...
Ooh, it's a first for me.
What's that? Yes.
Oh, it's a first question for me. I feel honored.
Has your high school guidance counselor shown up at any of your matches, and has he or she said, boy, it's a good thing you didn't go into architecture like George Costanza?
I'm running through my Rolodex of faculty members. I've had a few different faculty members and teachers and stuff end up at my shows. And I remember there was an awesome physics and chemistry professor. I think he also taught math at another school that I had. And he found out I was getting into wrestling. And, you know, I kind of stayed in contact with him even after I graduated. And so I told him one time, I was like, oh, you should come out to see a show. And it was actually EWE's Epic Rumble. They do like a 30-man, you know, rumble, kind of like you would see in WWE. And so he came to that, and I just remember like him watching me and just like, oh my God, you are nothing like the kid that, you know, I had in my class years ago. Cause back then I was kind of more of a really shy type kind of kid, and wrestling especially has brought out this like wild side to me. And so, you know, him and then a couple other faculty members, I remember two of the lunch ladies from my high school actually came to a show and didn't know I was a wrestler. And then like saw me, was just like, oh my gosh, like that's him. And, you know, it was so wild. And I remember like going to the school, because I'm still trying to get back with one of the high schools that I was at, and saying, oh, you know, it would be awesome to set up the ring in like the gymnasium and do a show there or something. And I remember like coming and just saying hi to the lunch ladies, and they're all talking me up, you know, with all these kids in line going, oh my gosh, he's a professional wrestler, get his autograph, you know, he's going to go pro and stuff. And so like, it was something that kind of like gave me that boost I really wanted, where I'm just like, oh, okay, this is cool. Some people, you know, really get into this, and they like seeing people go far.
Wow. Lunch ladies. Okay. That's real interesting. Very good. Okay. Well, Gogo, I saw your Epic Wrestling Entertainment video where you pulled into a Kia auto dealership and you had chicken flavored ramen noodles under the hood. My question is, did you use those ramen noodles as part of a trade-in?
I mean, if I can trade ramen for those hamsters are so freaking cute. You know, I've seen the little Kia Soul commercials on TV where it's a little dancing hamsters. And whenever one of my friend's cars actually, you know, was having trouble, he actually did go to Kia and bought a Kia Soul. It's a silver one. And so, what was funny, Jeff Daly, who works at Kia and everything, he was like, oh, you know, it would be fantastic to, you know, sponsor you guys and, you know, maybe do a commercial. And so one day I get this phone call that was like, hey, come on, we're coming up and we're, you know, doing a commercial. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so much fun. And, what was really humorous was, you know, we were just going to pop the hood and everything. And I actually suggested, like, oh, hey, is there any parts in, like, the Kia warehouse, like, where they do maintenance on cars and stuff? And I was just going to maybe drop some parts in the car and just be like, is this supposed to be attached to something? And just, you know, something funny. And I reach in and I realize there actually is a pack of ramen noodles that was inside the hood of the car. And thankfully, like, you know, it's not melted and, like, has done something crazy because it was kind of over in the corner. But, apparently, previously that night or something, they had brought groceries in and they set a couple of things up on the hood, and that just happened to kind of fall down in there. And so, you know, we propped the hood. I was like, why is this in the engine? If you guys watch this commercial, whoever's listening to this, like, it is the funniest reaction because it was so genuine when I'm looking at this thing going, oh my God, there's ramen noodles in the car and everything. And, and later in the commercial, I'm referring to the hamsters and stuff, but I've joked with him so much after that where I was like, let's go get sponsored by ramen. I was like, just let some ramen noodle, you know, company sponsor us on our gear. Down the side, we'll have noodles or something. I was, you know, if the New Day and WWE can run with pancakes and cereal, why not ramen noodles?
Whoa. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, go. I saw your YouTube video entitled The Supreme Team versus J-Mo and BW3, which is an abbreviation for Biff Wellington III. Well, Go-Go, in real life, did you know that Beef Wellington is like a cut of beef tenderloin, and I believe you sear this meat in a pan with mushrooms and shallots and garlic cloves, and then you let this seared tenderloin cool in the refrigerator. And when it's cool, you then coat this with a puff pastry sheet and whisked eggs. And then you place this on a sheet pan with parchment paper and you cook it for 400 degrees for 40 minutes. My question is, has Biff Wellington III ever been hit with a frozen Beef Wellington, to your knowledge?
You have never made BW3 sound so tasty in my entire life. oh, Lord. I do know what a Beef Wellington is. I watch Hell's Kitchen on Fox so much. I love Gordon Ramsay stuff. And so what's funny is I have never tied that together where that, you know, could, you know, be related to that. I know that he's retired now. He had his last match recently against his son. And I've got to get with him after this and just be like, have you ever eaten Beef Wellington? Or do you know what this is? And just be like, has anybody hit you with one of these? Because I've been asked this, and now I have to know this.
Oh, very good. All right. We do ask the questions that are pertinent on the show, very pertinent. All right. Well, go. Our time's going to slightly run out here. I had many more questions, but Sign Guy has to beeline it down to Portland, and so he needs a minute or two jump. It was very nice talking with you, and when you see Tommy Jack McGee, tell him hi, and maybe offer him some Beef Wellington. Yes.
I will. It was so wonderful with you having me, guys. Like, I hope maybe I can even do this again down the road. We'll do Go-Go's on the show twice.
Well, then I will save the rest of my questions, of which there were approximately five. Yes, I'll save that for next time. Okay. All right. Well, back to you, Sun Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Go-Go, we have a few minutes left, so I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you'd like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, social medias, merchandise, upcoming appearances, your favorite movie, theater, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
All right. Well, for everybody listening, you know, I'd love to see you at any shows. The next couple shows I have coming up, I believe there's an IWX show and I wish I knew the exact location of it. I was just informed today that I'm going to have a tag team match with Mr. Excitement against the Fago Freaks. I'll be posting that later on my Facebook and Instagram, so definitely check Gogo the Wrestler out on that. The huge show that I want everybody to try to be at is Epic Mania 3. It's Epic Wrestling Entertainment's biggest show. It's May 18th at 1416 Spring Street in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Doors are open at 5:30. Bell time is 6:30. Advance tickets are $10 and $12 at the door. And front row is $15, but you also get a free hot dog, drink, and an EWE koozie. And so in the interview where we're having Supreme Excitement versus Beer and Pizza, that's going to be at that show. So I really hope to see everybody there. Wrestling masks that I'm selling are also $10, and you get a free autographed photo with it. You can also buy those online if you want to shoot me a message and say hi. Other than that, check these guys at Turnbuckle Turmoil out. They are awesome, and it's been amazing to be able to be a part of the show.
It has been our pleasure having you. Hopefully we'll get to do this again soon, and hopefully our paths will cross so I can get you to sign the aforementioned Turnbuckle Turmoil guest book.
Oh, I can't wait for that moment.
All right, fans, get out there, support Gogo and all that he does. Fantastic competitor. I think you will enjoy him. He's got the big match with Beer and Pizza coming up. Get out there, buy a ticket for that. And we will be back with you next week. Next Friday afternoon, we have Cassidy Keith on the show. And 1 week from today, from Wrestle Club in Idaho, we have Saleem Abbas. So make sure you have plans to join us, and we'll talk to you soon. I believe in you.